You're listening to KPFK and Melting Pot, and it is our distinct pleasure to welcome in a legend and somebody who I'm really thankful to have in the studios right now. Barry Adamson is our guest in the studios. How are you doing, Barry?
Thank you, Michael. Nice to be here. You're doing good. Thank you.
And you're here in Los Angeles performing a show, a kind of more stripped down and kind of intimate thing. And you also have just an acoustic guitar for us today. It's a different sound than perhaps we're used to.
It's a kind of different version of me, I think. Well, there's been a sort of strange either progression or regression since the beginning sound of electronica and doing sort of weird experimental soundtracky things to sort of I guess in the last few years, more of a conventional songwriting. Usually I play with a full band, so we're able to go, you know, the full gamut of electronics. I'm just, you know, on my own promoting pretty much a new record. So I've got a stripped down show with a little bits of a playback and electronics and acoustic guitar, which will sort of give a general overview of what's been going on.
Yeah. Hopefully. Well, why don't we get you to perform a couple songs? I'm really excited just to hear you in this kind of style, and
sure.
I'm sure listeners who are familiar with your work are as well. So I'll throw it over to you for just a couple songs. This is Barry Adamson performing here live at KPFK.
Okay, here we go. People, they are dumb. They whisper that they love you and detonate a bomb. Well, I've been this way before, and now I open the door, and I know what you're thinking, but I've made up my mind. Separate myself from the blame, jump into the ocean and bathe my heart. People, they ain't no good. Their hearts are made of stone, their heads are made of wood. Oh, well, I've been this way before, now I open the door, and I know what you're thinking, but I've made up my mind. Separate myself from the shame, jump into the ocean and bathe my heart. Dabby 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 dum. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah. Dabby 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 dum. Whoa, whoa. Yeah. They are dumb. They whisper that they love you and then detonate a bomb. Well, I've been this way before, and now I open the door, and I know what you're thinking, but I've made up my separate myself from the blame, separate myself from the shame, separate myself from the game, jump into the ocean and bathe my heart.
Okay. Thank you.
never see who's sliding in from the frozen exterior. My icy fingertips made warm by her sweet lips, and she whispers something that you'll never hear. It's the same old break of day with my world in disarray, and the stupid things they say give me nothing but ails of your goddamn circus, a goddamn ball. Tell them we'll leave by the service door. Never my time, but you know I'll do some more. Yeah, yeah. Friends don't bother me, don't even call at all. They're busy whistling, Dixie, and cussing my name. My house is burning down, but then she come around and quell the fire and started to blaze again. It's the same old break of day with my world in disarray, the stupid things they say are the things that I portray. It's the same old break of day with my world in disarray, and the stupid things they say give me nothing but ails of your goddamn circus, a goddamn war. Tell them I'll leave out the service door. Done my time, but you know I'll do no more. No more. There we go. No more. Doing each other's heads in through the power of suggestion. And we'll be doing each other's heads in, yeah. Attention, and that's the power of suggestion, and we'll be doing each other's heads in, yeah.
You just heard Barry Adamson perform a couple songs here in our studios, and again, Barry, it really is a pleasure for me to have you here. Known quite a bit about your work. I think that my introduction to you was around the period of time when, I guess, Oedipus, Schmedipus came out. And just before that, I guess this was right around the time I got into college. And so I had just gotten introduced to Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds and those early Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds records that you were on. And especially the bass playing on Your Funeral, My Trial, that song, like it still kind of haunts me to this day.
It still haunts me as well, Michael. I've got to tell you that. It was a pivotal moment of my bass playing career. No, I mean, it's a beautiful song.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that is really striking to me about that song in particular. And I mean, there are so many different songs over your career. I mean, it's a 30 plus year musical career at this point, with some amazing bands early on, and then as a solo artist, though still in collaboration with a number of incredible people. But as you were kind of saying, how that song haunts your memories, it also haunts mine, just because it was kind of that introduction, because it literally was a moment where I was like, who's playing bass on this song? Like, I don't know if I've heard. Yeah, like, how do you get that sound? And it's, you know, something that stuck with me and has, you know, constantly gotten me excited to continue to hear more from you. And so one of the things I did want to kind of start off asking you just a few questions about kind of your upbringing. I'm always really interested in learning a little bit more about kind of how musicians kind of come into music making process. And I know that you grew up in Manchester, and I was wondering how that experience growing up and at that particular period of time, how that influenced you to move on to magazine other things.
I think it was very important time, and I was at the right place at the right time, being 17 years old, and the punk movement had just sort of kicked off, and I was all set to be a graphic designer, or at least something to do with drawing or the arts or something. And you know, magazine came along and sort of it was like one of those doors that just opens and you sort of look at it and go, I'm meant to go through there. So I'm just going to walk through it and see what happens. And it was all very, it was all done very swiftly. You know, I was at college, and then over the weekend, I went to buy a bass guitar. I had two strings on it. No, somebody gave me a bass guitar. I went to buy the other strings. That was it.
Had you ever played before?
I just messed about a little bit at school, but I saw all these other people sort of playing Stairway to Heaven in their sleep and just thought, there's no way I can ever do any of that. So four strings looked more appealing anyway at the time. So I got the other two strings, and there was an advert for magazine. So I called it, and then by the weekend, I was in the band. After the weekend, I was in the band, so I quit the college thing. And being in Manchester there was a whole legacy of stuff around you, you know, that you knew was sort of a kind of strange epicenter, you know, America over there, the rest of Europe over there, and you're in the middle of it. And there's just, you know, as you can see now, the history of people and bands that come from Manchester is very influential outside of London. So we didn't really need to go anywhere at that time. We went to London a bit later on once magazine got going. But as the starting point, I think Manchester was the center of the world, as it were.
Yeah, and it was a nice run with magazine for a few years. Magazine, a band, most people, if they have to put a label on it, would call it kind of like a
post-punk
kind of band.
New wave, yeah.
And after that, you found your way to Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, and Nick Cave also, prior to the Bad Seeds formation, was in the Birthday Party. It was kind of like a punk art rock kind of band as well. And to me, I would think listeners of Magazine or listeners of the Birthday Party really must not have been ready in some ways for the kind of sound that you guys got together. It still is a sound, those first four records that you were involved with, that is really hard to classify to me.
I think they're pretty unique, those records. I was doing something last year and having to sort of go over them a little bit and sort of thinking how strange they are and how bizarre they are and how, in some ways, I talked at the beginning about whether it's sort of progression or regression, that you become a pretty mainstream just sort of playing your song, you know, like, which Nick kind of does now, really. But to go back and listen to those tracks, they're just something else. They're, I mean, my attraction, I saw a little bit of that in the Birthday Party. I must admit, there was a magazine was very very controlled and very disciplined, whereas, you know, and I think somewhere in there I craved a little bit of the opposite, which was sort of chaotic and not very disciplined in some ways, and see how that, you know, how music was created from that side of the world, if you like. And I certainly got that. And during those four records, I watched how sort of like, things come together in just another sort of way altogether than someone coming in and going, okay, it goes to C, the G, and then the E minor. You know, it's just this thing that's forced out of the situation of being with other people in a room, you know. And so it was, as far as like Magazine and the Bad Seeds go, after that I felt I had everything that I needed, really, from being in a band and how that was and how that affected you as a person. And then the encouragement as well of working with other people like Iggy Pop and some other, you know, to then go on my own and see what I wanted to get at.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things it's kind of implicit in some of the things that you were saying right there. One of the things that I've always found really fascinating about your solo work is that on the one hand, it is very deeply personal and deeply individualistic. I mean, at this point, I don't, how many instruments can you play at this point? You can pretty much...
Well, I'm a bit of a, you know, I'm sort of, what do you call it, something of many, but whatever of none. So I kind of, you know, it's like, for example, to come here and then, you know, present the songs of the new album, and I thought, well, that would probably be the best way to do that would be with an acoustic guitar. I don't really play acoustic guitar in terms of that's what I do every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, I might carve out the songs that way and write, and then someone will come in and play. You know, I don't sit around playing the acoustic. So I kind of had 2 weeks of sitting down and playing the acoustic guitar. But it's that thing where, you know, there's an instrument, it makes sound. Let's see what you can get out of it. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, of course, my first port of call was the bass, and so I feel like I'm a fairly proficient bass player, and I can do a bit of drums and a bit of guitar and a bit of keyboard, you know, that sort of thing, like, in order to write the stuff that I do.
Yeah, so many people, you know, they have kind of their one instrument and they're kind of held to it. But as I was saying, you know, it's the situation where that you're a multi-instrumentalist and that you, it seems very clear that you have very, very strong kind of individual opinions about your sound. But there's also this very strong collaborative focus throughout almost all of your solo career, too. And that kind of balance between presenting yourself as an individual artist, but also collaborating with, I mean, in some cases, really big heavyweights, you know, Robert Fripp. You mentioned Iggy Pop, Jarvis Cocker, David Lynch, all these other kinds of people that have kind of been throughout your career. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that as a solo artist, these kind of two sides of the solo artist, both collaborating and also presenting your own vision.
I think you kind of move around in a way that you want to get at something and you want, you know, to be a part of the magic, but you also have an idea of pretty much how you want your picture to look. And if somebody else is also, you know, getting their picture up there, you can't help but sort of stand back and be appreciative of the way, of what their angle is, and you very quickly sort of work with what's going on, and that's why you want to collaborate with them in the first place. And I think there has to be a sort of element of trust of what's going to be delivered and how it's going to be perceived and all the rest of it. But then you've still got your thing of being like the molder, you know, so it's a bit like sculpting, and then you get this sort of bit of clay and then you start molding it around, and then you go, oh, that's the way I do, you know, that's the way you do, and the other person will do their thing, and you go, that's really good, you know. So I quite enjoy that, but I am a little bit of like, right, now everyone's gone, let's get to work. So I can, then I sit down with the clay and I can go, just had a really good idea about this. And sometimes, you know, I have to, you know, see that what I'm doing is like a very elaborate, colourful sketchbook, and then get people in to sort of help me create that, you know. And I've like four or five guys who, on the new record, for example, and the last record and the record before, I know what they do, and I know how they do it very well. So I have fun going like, oh, when Ian comes in and he's going to play that beat, he's just going to take it out, and I'll go, well, you know, that's the beat I have. And he'll go, okay. And then he'll start doing it, and then just throw something in, and you'll go, oh, my God. And that's why, because it's like I have my limitations, you know, and I know what they are, as you can probably hear from my acoustic guitar. No, but, you know, I know my limitations. So therefore, if you're going to do things in a certain way, then you bring people in that are appropriate to do, you know. So I can work that way as well as a producer and an arranger. I think that's the main things that I'm getting at the end of the day, the way it sounds when you hear the final thing as well.
Tell me a little bit about the process of this, putting together this new record, I'll Set You Free.
Well, this was it's quite odd, because I actually started this record about 18 months ago, and I hit this sort of, I had about maybe, I don't know, 12, 13 tracks, and I hit this sort of brick wall, which was like, usually I'm quite, you know, I don't, well, so far, touch wood, don't really suffer from like writer's block and this kind of thing, but what I did suffer from was I started to see these little default sort of traits that I have that I was falling into quite a bit. And so it started to become a little bit painting by numbers, painting by, you know, Barry Adamson, sort of like, and there's a jazzy bit and there's a this bit. And I thought, whoa, this is really scary. I thought, you know what? I've got to do something else. I've got to do something else altogether. And I'd always been going on in every interview about film and my, you know, obsession with film and the people I've worked with, like you say, you know, David Lynch and, you know, Oliver Stone and all these different people. And I thought, you know, what I've got to do, I've got to make a film. And, you know, the time to do it is now, because, you know, you can afford a camera that, you know, will get out all the rest of it, and you can probably do it. So I made a 40-minute film, which is kind of like an album as well, called Therapist, with a soundtrack.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the film later, so were kind of working on the album.
Yeah.
And not quite in a moment of writer's block, but just kind of a slight dissatisfaction. Yeah. You're like, you move towards the film.
More than I've had before.
Wow.
And I thought, well, maybe that's it. You know, so I made the film, and I was able to write it, direct it, and edit it, and put the music on. So I felt, you know, that I got that out, as it were. And then, in the last 9 months, maybe, 6 to 9 months, the album just kind of shot through. Maybe there's only two tracks that were in the original writing. So, and then the album just literally flew at me. You know, I had to chase tracks down the street and sort of go, you know, come back, you know, because it was just all really going off. So I feel really good that kind of happened in a very quick way. And I made it pretty much at home. And then I took it to another studio and put it through big old analog desk, got some really, you know, sort of big juicy sounds on there because it was that kind of record. And I guess really, in a nutshell, what happened was I went back for a magazine reunion before I made the film, and I think what it made me do was it sort of alerted me to a sound that I hadn't really been a part of for a long time, which was more the rock thing, which was, you know, the early days, it was all about that. And so I almost like found something again that was in myself that I'd sort of go, went, you can, you know, just rest there for a little while. You know, it's that 14-year-old kid who kind of waited for Alice Cooper records to come through the letterbox from America and go like, yeah. So that was its evolution, really.
Yeah, and that comes through on the album, you know, really, really clearly from the first track, from, you know, Get Your Mind Right, yeah, which just kind of screams out the box. And it's one of the things in thinking about the record and the last, in the last couple records that you've put out, that it does have this different feel to it. It still has, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about a kind of expectations on a certain sound for you. It still, and maybe actually, now that I'm thinking about it in my head as I'm saying this, maybe it's less about the actual sound of the record, more kind of the listener's expectation, because I think a lot of your music in the solo career, or post Bad Seeds, has had this kind of darker quality to it and much darker tones, musically and lyrically. And so it's hard in some ways for a fan of your music, I think, maybe to listen to it with new ears, which was one of the things, again, that really struck me in hearing you play acoustic, just how different the sound of your music is in that kind of space versus the kind of fully produced space.
Well, I like to think that, people's expectations will be sort of thwarted in a way that's they can, you know, at least sort of see a side of it rather than going home and going, well, that was pretty awful, wasn't it? You know, why did he bother coming out? No, but you know, and in this the little showcase, if you like, that I'm doing, I'm going to try and sort of show pretty much all the different facets. There'll be something, you know, dark and humorous, and there'll be something kind of light and sprinkly and something a bit jazzy. So, you know, but it's hard to sort of condense all that. And I mean, I've not played here before ever, so that sort of poses something to me as well. Whereas, like, in anywhere else, I've seen people kind of, you know, go with each record and go like, hey, yeah, you know, and then when I do a certain one, they go, yeah, that's. But I kind of cover all the bases in that way. So, I think people will like what I'm doing anyway.
Yeah, it is something that I think, again, as a long-time listener to your music, or a fairly long-time listener to your music, that it was jarring in that good way that you were kind of describing right there. Took a couple listens.
It's getting worried for a second. Well, Barry, you've come all the way out here and you brought a piece of crap. What is this?
No, but it is really fascinating to me, just both the kind of when you feel like you kind of have a read on somebody or somebody's sound, how some what are very subtle changes in some ways really make a big difference.
I think there's a subtlety in there because obviously it comes from the same place in terms of the person, but I'm also playing with things as well. You know, like I Will Set You Free is the sort of not so much the jokey ethic of the record, but there is the idea of it being less oppressive, if you like, that I'm, you know, like sort of getting in there and boxing the sounds, you know. And it really, as I say, the way the record came through me, if you like, I almost felt this sort of weird sort of uplift to push out this thing and actually set it free, if you like, you know. And then in that, maybe perhaps myself a bit more, you know, or whatever. I don't know. So it became the sort of, like, I could see that there was something kind of brewing in that sense. And, you know, there was a couple of tracks, and I think one of them ended up, I think it was track six, The Trigger City Blues, which is probably one of the darkest things I've ever done, you know. And that had to stay for a little bit of a balance, you know. But, yeah, I think I start to see a glimpse of what, almost like what it's telling me where it wants to go in a way as well.
Now, it's interesting in hearing you tell the tale earlier that this record and kind of that freeing aspect came from you focusing on doing something that you, though you'd had this great interest in film, you hadn't been a filmmaker.
No.
Do you, after making Therapist, do you want to continue continue making films?
Yeah, I'd love to. But, you know, now, of course, it seems to be the hard part, which is generating money to make a feature. 40 minutes you can probably just about do, you know, yourself. And you know, but in terms of a bigger picture, you then have to get sort of a lot more serious. But I've got a couple of things on the go which I'm writing. And also I occasionally work on a show in England called Ideal, which is a comedy show, which I act on a little bit. And the writer that was very interested in the film, and he said, I'd love to work with you and come up with something. And we've got an idea going that's pretty full on. And we're going to start working on that in the new year for a feature.
Now, your first solo record, Moss Side Story, was more or less a soundtrack for a film that didn't exist. Yeah. Is there any idea in your mind to maybe actually create that film as a film?
A lot of water has gone under the the bridge. The Manchester Ship Canal has gone under a lot of bridges since then. And it's funny because, like, along the way, people have come up to me at various points and sort of said, oh, I'm interested in making that film, if you like. Well, maybe not. If anyone's going to make that film, I'll make it. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much. And occasionally I get sort of the notebook out and start scribbling down notes, you know, particularly if I've been to Manchester recently and drove around my side. I start to sort of get this you know, sense. One day, I think when it would be an easier thing to do, I'd like to do a sort of, you know, almost like a biopic kind of thing from the 50s to now. You know, maybe someone who grows up through the whole thing. That's quite interesting to me. But, yeah, I think I need to get a few things under my belt first.
All right. Is there any way we get you to perform another song?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Have guitar, we'll travel and play.
Thank you so much. We've been talking to Barry Adamson here at KPFK in Melting Pot, and I'll throw it over to him for another song.
The storm it came, but it merely only broke me for a while. Ooh, I heard my name, and it took me, and it shook me like a child. The sun and the sea, my love endlessly. Bring me your eyes, your plastic little lives, and I will set you free. Brothers burn with rage. Ooh, I killed the bear and I ate up all the people in my cage. The sun and the sea, my love endlessly. Bring me your dreams, you don't know what it means, and I will set you free.
You just heard Barry Adamson performing here in our studios at KPFK and Melting Pot. Once again, I can't thank you enough for coming in, Barry. It was fascinating on so many different levels, and like again, shocking, like in the best way, and kind of where you feel like you have a really good read for how something sounds, and then hear it in a totally different way. I don't know if you'll ever just decide to do an album just with acoustic guitar and that marvelous voice of yours, but it would be really interesting,
even
just to hear that, or maybe kind of like a reimagining of some record, you know.
Well, I guess what I've had to do with these tracks is reimagine them in a way. It's funny because it's almost like somebody else's work, and you're going like, "What does he play there?" In fact, I sent an email to Bobby, our guitarist, going, "What's that inversion that you play there? That's not, you know."
Yeah.
Of course, he never got back to me. So you're going, "Figure it out yourself. You wrote it, yeah, but you play it so differently."
Yeah. But it's just been it's been absolute joy.
No, it's nice to be
Thank
here.
Thank you so much for
Thank
coming.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Michael.
Now, here is a song from his new release, which is going to be coming out in February, called I Will Set You Free. The name of the song is If You Love Her, from Barry Adamson, here on KPFK and Melting Pot.
Into her face as she was leaving, saw my future written between the lines. The church bells will no longer be appealing. Dark must fall where the sun no longer shines. If you love her, won't you tell her? She was everything and more when you were her fella. If you love her, won't you let her go where hope is? It's not around here anymore. Firmly drenched in sorrow, the fruits of love almost shriveled up and dry. Each moment now is a version of tomorrow, seen through the eyes of one who can only cry. If you love her, won't you tell her? She was everything and more when you were together. And if you love her, won't you let her go where hope is? When did I become your only one? Forgotten. Made up to always cast a smile. This velvet suit can never hide the bruising. My goodness, you've been laughing and all.